You're listening to the Courageous Life Podcast, helping you develop courage and resilience in a perilous and unpredictable world. This is your host, Sean Mitzel. I'm coming to you from the mountains of northern Idaho. I'm glad you're with us. On today's podcast, for the Worldview segment, we go to Atlanta, Georgia, where the fire chief there was fired very clearly for his religious beliefs. The fact of the matter is that erotic liberty took precedence over the First Amendment of the Constitution, and specifically religious liberty. And for our main topic, I go into more business ideas for 2015. And so it's part two of the Small Business Ideas podcast. On today's Worldview segment, we go to Atlanta, Georgia with the New York Times. And in Atlanta, the mayor there, his name is Kasim Reed, announced this last week the firing of the fire chief there in Atlanta, Georgia. The previous fire chief is Kelvin Cochran. And the reason he was fired is because Cochran gave workers a religious book he wrote containing passages that condemn homosexuality. All right. Now, in that statement right there, they make it sound like he had boxes and boxes of books and handed them out to all of his employees, all of the firefighters there, and required them to read the book or something like that. But when in reality, what he did is he gave out three books to people he knew personally that shared his faith, that were Christians who believed along the same lines that he believed. Now, what Reed did, again, this is the mayor, he suspended Cochran for a month without pay, and this was in November. This opened up an investigation, and the question was whether or not Mr. Cochran authored and distributed this book to workers, and if it violated the city's non-discrimination policies. All right, so that created a lot of debate, as you can imagine, a lot of outcry on both sides for religious liberty, and also the LGBT community came out strongly condemning him, wanting his head, wanting him fired. At the Georgia Baptist Convention got involved. So there was a lot of stuff going on both sides, talking about First Amendment rights, religious liberty, etc. All right, so Reed, who is kind of stuck in this place, you know, there's a lot of Christians in Atlanta and in that area in Georgia. But there's also a very powerful and large LGBT activist groups, you know, that are there as well. So at a news conference, Reed had said that Mr. Cochran's, quote, personal religious beliefs are not the issue, unquote. All right. They are exactly the issue. His religious beliefs are the issue. This is basically an Orwellian newspeak of wording that he is dancing around. Of course, religious beliefs are the issue. His ability to hand out a book that he wrote personally to only a handful of people that believed along the same lines as he did does not constitute some type of distribution of religious literature condemning homosexuality. Okay, this was a very personal thing. And so what the mayor did is said, hey, he violated Atlanta's non-discrimination policy. And he said, that's non-negotiable. He then went on to fire him. All right. So we went from suspending him for the investigation, found that he had violated the discrimination policy, and then fired him. And then Reed went on to say, quote, every single employee under the fire chief's command deserves the certainty that he or she is a valued member of the team and that fairness and respect guide employment decisions, unquote. All right, now what he should have said there, instead of that statement, he should have said every single employee, except Christians who do not believe along the same lines as the LGBT community, under the fire chief's command deserve the certainty that he or she is a valued member, unless you're one of those Christians, of the team, and that fairness and respect, unless you're a Christian, guide employment decisions. Okay, that's what he should have said. That's what he actually said without saying it. All right, so this book that Cochran wrote condemned homosexuality in, I'm sure, a like manner that the Bible condemns homosexuality, along with all kinds of other sexual sins and other sins that are non-sexual in nature. Okay, now, Cochran's goal was to honor God through his life, his service, etc. Now, one of the things that Cochran brought up, which I found very interesting, is that when he took his oath of office, he says it ended with the phrase, "So help me God." And then he goes on to say, if glorifying God was a violation, I should have been fired at the very end of my oath. It's kind of ironic that in his oath that he took, he says it by ending with, "So help me God." And in Cochran's mind, he literally meant that, not as some platitude or just something that goes at the end of an oath that I don't take seriously. Okay, he meant that. And then this judge, through political correctness, fires him. The bottom line here is this, is that religious liberty, constitutional religious liberty under the First Amendment, took a back seat to erotic liberty. Okay, something that is not even in the Constitution. And that is what happened here in Atlanta, Georgia, very recently. So as Christians, what do we need to do? We need to hold fast to our faith, to our historic Christian teaching found in the Bible, which is our starting point, our compass that guides us and directs us in our faith, gives us what we need to know for life, faith, and practice. The other thing that we need to get out of this is that we must expect and be willing and able to persevere through adversity. Adversity will come, okay? It has certainly come for Mr. Cochran. He's taken it very well. I heard him just, I think it was yesterday, he basically said, "Hey, I'm going to move on and I'm going to do other things." And that was just basically his attitude. I'm going to look for ways that I can glorify God through my life and actions. And apparently that is not with the Atlanta Fire Department. Okay, so we must, as Christians, expect and be able to persevere through adversity. And so then I would just encourage you to live your life courageously, take a stand, make a stand on something. All right, the next business idea would be a backyard nursery. Now, this has a lot of potential. I mean, a lot of potential. Go to your local nursery and buy plant starts or trees. It's expensive. I mean, this is a significant cost to you as somebody who's trying to produce and work your land, etc. Now, if you buy trees, and hopefully those trees produce over decades of time, you're getting tons of value for that. But that tree, that yearling tree, might cost you $15, $20 per tree. Okay, so a backyard nursery where you're growing and growing trees, and I would focus on perennials. I wouldn't do annual starts. I would do perennials. Because that what that gives you is the ability to get online, to sell online. But you can market to your area, so your zone. So, you know, we're up here in zone 6, so I'd be marketing in this area, but I would certainly offer some online. So you'd have cold hardy type trees that you were growing, or in perennial bushes, etc. And a lot of these you can do plant propagation. So for example, you can go to any nursery online and buy something like plantain or comfrey. Well, you can propagate that yourself at home. You can propagate that and then start building your own backyard nursery of perennials. And I would recommend you do this with trees. You can grow trees from seed. You can do it in your own little nursery and have your own little small business. And the great thing about that is that these trees, they're valuable, especially over time. I mean, you're talking about productive trees or support species that help productive trees. And you just think about an apple tree. Okay, so yeah, you buy the apple tree for 15 or 20 bucks. Well, how long, I mean, if that apple tree lasts you 30 or 40 years, how much value have you gotten from that apple tree? A ton of value. So it's a great little business. Okay, so especially if you're willing to get into like grafting and that kind of thing, even a really small backyard business can net you many thousands of dollars a year just on a little side business that doesn't take a whole lot of money or effort. Okay, there's some work involved, of course, but if you have a passion for that kind of thing or your business, then you'll probably enjoy that. Okay, the next small business idea would be pet sitting. This is a huge opportunity for many people. Now you can just see, this is something that we did while we were in Okinawa. We did it for a year and a half as a side business to help us raise money for our adoption. And it was great. I mean, we made several thousand extra dollars per year. Okay. You know, again, we did it for a year and a half, so you can proportion that out. We made several thousand extra dollars per year by simply pet sitting. We charged less, a little bit less than the local kennel did. And we offered what people wanted, and they wanted their pets, because we're pet people, we're passionate about animals, and we take good care of them. And what we did is we offered people to say, hey, we'll take care of your pets. They'll be kept, they'll be well kept. They'll be in a family environment. They're going to be around people all the time. I mean, we homeschool our kids. These pets were always around people. They were constantly getting attention. They were taking on several walks a day, and it was great. And we had repeat customer after repeat customer. Many times we were just booked and could not take anymore, because we could only take on usually one pet at a time, sometimes two, especially if it was people whose pets knew each other or if people had multiple pets. So we would take on no more than two at a time. And it was a great need, we couldn't even keep up with demand, which was okay. It was just a little side business, helped us raise money. It did its work. We enjoyed it. The people were happy to pay us. In most cases, they gave us a little extra, just because they appreciated us taking good care of their pets for them, that their pets were not stuck in some cage all day, every day for weeks on end, that they were kept in a family environment. This is a great opportunity. Pet sitting, small part-time business on the side. Another one is babysitting. Okay, being a good babysitter. Now, I'll tell you, my daughter made really good money babysitting. Really good money. Once word got around that she was reliable, and we always taught her, you do a little extra. Okay, what she would do consistently is when she would go and babysit kids for families, she would always do things like clean the living room, do the dishes. So when parents got home, the kids were well taken care of, they had a good time, and their living room was clean, and their kitchen was clean. I mean, she always got excellent, she demanded a decent price for babysitting, a good price, the going price, which is pretty expensive, and they always gave her good tips.
beyond that. That was a great little moneymaker for her. Now, that can be done in your home. You could call this daycare or babysitting, whatever you want to call it. There's a great opportunity here. People will pay good money if their children are taken care of very well. And if you're going to do it in their home, you can likely charge a premium, especially if you even add on to what you're doing. You can even say, hey, yes, I will babysit your children, and for a little extra, I will even clean your home. I will clean your kitchen. I will, not clean the entire home, but you'll do extra. And like I said, my daughter did this just automatically. We just taught her to do that, and she made up for it in just tips. She made a lot of extra money in just tips. But this is maybe an extra service you could offer. Who knows what the potential is. Maybe you offer to teach the children something. Maybe, piano lessons or gymnastics martial arts if they have that particular skill, in addition to babysitting, okay? Whereas most people have problems finding good babysitters that are reliable, that won't just sit there on their phone the whole time, ignoring the kids, okay, and just sticking them in front of the TV. Okay, you do a little extra, it goes a long way. You build value, and you will build customers very quickly. Now, the next thing I would offer as a small business idea for people out there that they can start relatively cheaply, easily, and quickly, would be to take whatever existing skills you have and offer that to people, especially kids. Okay, especially kids. I don't care if, let's say, you have carpentry skills. You're able to teach kids how to do projects, building projects, birdhouses and benches and tool chests, whatever. Or maybe it's welding that you could teach that. Or it's martial arts. Offer that. It's a self-defense class. Offer that as a service. People are willing, especially if you make it convenient for them, they're willing to pay you to teach their kids particular skills. Maybe it's animal husbandry, or whatever. In a great market for this, homeschoolers are always looking for this kind of thing. They really are. Or maybe it's an after-school program. But there is a market out there for real skills to be taught to their kids. Okay, people they do it over and over again. They have their kids in all these different activities, but it's all the same stuff. It's the gymnastics, it's the ballet, it's the, it's whatever. It's the music class, and those are great. And you can tell people are looking for these kinds of things. How about something unique, like small engine repair or basic carpentry skills, where maybe you're a hobbyist woodworker, and then you can take six young boys or young men into your home every Saturday for a 2-hour class that these kids are signing up for. Okay, it might just pay for your hobby, and they can build birdhouses and things like that. Okay, and you're teaching them a valuable skill. So that would be something. What skills do you have? Is it self-defense? Is it maybe you're teaching them to shoot with an airsoft pistol? I mean, you got to be creative with this. Okay, the next business, which is kind of the stereotypical small business, but I think it's a great idea, and there's ways to stack value with this as well, is landscaping. Okay, lawn service. You've proven yourself to be a reliable yard maintenance guy or gal. You could create a good small business just doing this. You can be highly successful doing this. I know many people who have taken just basic landscaping to a very lucrative career, especially if you get to the point where you're the owner and you have, say, three crews out taking care of people's lawns all the time. This is great stuff. In fact, my son, he had his own landscaping business, if you will. Now, it was mostly just mowing lawns, and he was doing it to earn money. But that's okay. He had I don't remember how many, but he probably had half a dozen lawns that he was taking care of. And it was just a little side business. He did that in addition to some other things that he was doing when he was still living at home. But it's a successful little business. People want other people to come in and take care of their lawns. Maybe they don't have time or they don't want to do it. They're willing to pay for it. Okay, if you show yourself to do a good job, you can be successful at this. And again, are you doing a little extra? Not just mowing the lawn, are you edging it? And then are you sweeping up afterwards? And you can get really good at this and do this quickly, and it shows great value. They come out and they go, wow, this looks great. This isn't just some kid who's coming by mowing the lawn and walking away, leaving grass on the sidewalk. Okay? So you do a little bit extra. You go beyond what the customer is expecting, and they're going to want you to continue to come back. Okay? The next business idea is having farm shares. And I kind of alluded to this earlier as far as getting around regulations. Again, legally getting around regulations. So, for example, and again, what I'm doing today is not to give you very specific ideas that you can, but to get you thinking about small business and what kinds of things. So I'm not going into any kind of depth or detail on any of these ideas, because again, it would be up to you to take something like this or maybe a spinoff of some of these things and turn it into a business concept. But the reason I bring up the farm share is because it's a creative way of getting around existing regulations. Okay, again, legally getting around it. So the example is, in some states, not here in Idaho, but in some states, it's illegal to sell raw milk. But it's not illegal to have a farm share where you receive raw milk by owning a portion of the cow. Okay, it's the same thing. You're paying and getting raw milk from someone who's taking care of the cow for you, but you're doing it legally, okay? Whereas it would be illegal for that person to give you a gallon of raw milk and for you to buy it without our safety and security regulators taking care of us, okay? So that's what I'm saying. So, for example, farm share. If I want to raise a pig and I have a buddy who says, man, I could really use a half of a pig, you know, as far as getting meat for my freezer. Well, a farm share would be a way of doing that. Now, there's many different ways to do that. Okay, so again, it's based on the regulations in your state. I might be able to just outright sell him 100 pounds of pork. Okay, I'm going to sell, we have an existing agreement. I'm going to raise an extra pig for him. I'm going to sell it to him at $3.50 a pound, dressed out. And he's going to buy it, and that's good to go. No problem. Okay, or maybe there's regulations in the way that say, well, you can't do that unless it's processed a certain way and inspected and blah, 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 because two adults can't come together and make a decision to sell one another anything without our safety and security regulators getting involved. So maybe there's a way where it's legal that, okay, he buys the pig, I raise the pig for him, and then, you know, I'm just raising it for him. I'm basically a contractor raising the pig, feeding it, caring for it for him, and then at the end, we slaughter the pig, and he gets his meat, okay? Or maybe the regulations state that we can't do that. So, well, he buys the pig, I raise it for him, but then we have to get it processed somewhere to do it legally, and so maybe that's what we do. Okay, so whatever the case is, you know, you have to work within those regulations, but there's always ways to make it, to work around it and to make it more advantageous for you and your customer. Okay, so you have to kind of learn those tricks, but don't be afraid to ask questions. Remember, we're getting back to that, those entrepreneurial traits of knowing what you don't know and not being afraid to ask questions. Now, what would that do for you as the small business owner who likes to eat healthy, and so you raise your own pigs, for example, or ducks, because you want to know where your food's coming from and you don't want the commercially raised pork. Okay. So, you know, you could do these farm shares and whatever means required to help offset your costs. In fact, you could easily get to the point where someone else, and again, where this is win-win, someone else is paying for you and your pork, paying for your pigs, and so in the end, yes, you're putting in some labor, but your freezer's full, and it didn't cost you any money. Okay, and maybe you even made a profit on it. You made a little bit of extra money, and your freezer is full for free. Okay, that's the side business. If you reduce your food bill, and I'll tell you honestly, so with 7 kids out here, we have a pretty big food bill, which is going down all the time as we are able to grow more and more of our own food. And if you've been listening to this podcast, you know we have a goal of producing at least 80% of our own caloric intake from the farm by August of 2016. And that's going to significantly cut down our food bill massively, okay? Because you can imagine. So you take your family of 3 or 4, think about your monthly food bill, multiply that out, and then you'll know how much it costs approximately. All right. So, and if you can reduce that down by 80%, that's a small business right there. Okay. Now, if I multiply that, stack that function, and now I'm getting my customers to pay for even the feeding and caring of that, I am massively reducing my food bill. And now if I can get my customers to not only feed and care for all the animals and, you know, produce that I get, but then also give me an extra profit. Now I'm being paid to not only feed my family for free, but also to give other people, customers, healthy food as well. That's great. That's a big time win-win. Okay, I want to close out today with just talking about another kind of concept or principle, and that is this stacking of functions, the stacking of incomes, and the reselling to your customers that you've built. Okay, so stacking multiple functions, multiple businesses. And this is what I mean. Let's take the example of the duck egg. Let's say you have your small little business. You've got your at this point you've built up a couple dozen, maybe 3 dozen ducks that are producing eggs for you. The care and feeding of the ducks is free because of the little bit of money that you get from selling several dozen eggs a week, and you got all the eggs that you want. And then all of a sudden you decide, you know what? We've got these few fruit and nut trees here on the property and our small acreage. Let's add bees. Okay, and you decide to add bees, and you're able to propagate bees. They're doing really well. And after a season or two, you start getting flush with honey. And you're able to, you know what? We have all the honey that we could use. That we have enough honey to keep in the hives for the bees to overwinter. And we still have a surplus. Well, guess what? So let's take this extra few gallons of honey and let's sell them. Well, who are we going to sell them to? Well, how about our duck customers? How about our duck customers? So you try that, you go to them and they're like, absolutely. Yeah, we'll buy some local honey. That's great. You see how those functions stack? And reselling to your customers. I'll give you another example. Up here in northern Idaho, there are a lot of people out here. It's really interesting to see how many people will do a seasonal type business. Okay, and that's another thing that's great to think about. Can you even do a seasonal business? Is there maybe a couple months out of the year where you do this business based on something that's seasonal? Okay, so you think of a farmer's market or something like that. But in this case, what I'm talking about is snow plowing. You'll see a lot of pickup trucks with a snow plow on it. And it's not just to plow their own driveway, their own parking lot, you know, at their home or their business. Okay, they're doing it as a side business. And it's really interesting, as you see this a lot, you see a snow plow on a truck that has magnets on the side that will be a landscaping company, will be a timber company, will be a construction company, will be a dry cleaning company, whatever. Is what they're doing is that they're stacking their functions, and they're probably utilizing their existing network, because these are either existing business owners or they're people that are just doing it on the side, but a lot of them are business owners. I see that over and over again because business owners tend to innovate and stack functions and resell to their existing customers or their network. All right, so it's very interesting to see, using that microcosm, this one example of the snow plow, of people offering that service, okay? And a lot of times they let their own customers, their customer base know, yeah, we do snow plowing as well. So, and they're busy, I'm telling you. So for a couple months out here in North Idaho, you see all these personal trucks with snow plows on them working. You see them out in the Lowe's parking lot, the Walmart parking lot, plowing. Okay, they're building customers. They're doing this micro business on the side for a couple months out of the year, and I'm willing to bet they work their tails off for a couple months. They've worked really hard, but I bet you they make pretty good money in those 2 months. And a lot of them are people who own businesses that slow down in the winter. Okay, so they've thought through this. They know that, okay, winter is, you know, December and January are my slow months. And how can I fill that? Well, this is one way that they're able to do that. Well, that'll close out today's podcast on small business ideas from 2015. I'd love to hear from you. What are your ideas? What are some ideas that other people could take on for themselves? You know, and there's always this notion with entrepreneurs, the idea of, I want to keep close hold. I don't want to tell anybody my idea, otherwise they're going to steal it. Well, like I said in the beginning, most people have lots of ideas that never go anywhere. Okay? What I would recommend is something that I heard from somebody and I took it on, is I don't hold, you know, I'm not talking about every tiny little thing, but I don't hold any particular ideas in. I share ideas with people because a lot of times you'll get good feedback. They'll ask questions that will make you think of things and help you to develop your business concept. Very rarely are people taking others' ideas and stealing them. I know it happens in the corporate world with copyright, trademarks, and patents, and all that kind of stuff. It almost never happens on the small business owner. I think we'd be better off if we helped each other along the way. One example is I was recently contacted by another guy who does podcasts as well, and it's a similar realm to mine. I'm not going to not promote him, and I don't think he's not going to promote me. Okay, I think we should help each other along the way. I think it's great that other people want to do this kind of thing. And if I help him out, he's probably going to help me out. Okay, and I think that's a better course of action than to try and keep it tight-fisted and closed and not help people out along the way.
Our scripture for today comes from Proverbs chapter 3, verses 7 through 10. Be not wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. It will be healing to your flesh and refreshment to your bones. Honor the Lord with your wealth and with your first fruits of all your produce. Then your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will be bursting with wine. That's the podcast for today. Don't forget to visit us at thecourageouslifepodcast.com. Please leave us some comments and questions. Also, like us on Facebook, The Courageous Life Podcast. Thanks for listening. Semper Fidelis and Soli Deo Gloria.